Gearhead Radio on AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Jimmy Purdy is brought to you by Shifting Gears in Paso Robles, 1621 North River Road. Shifting Gears has you covered from your weekend cruiser to your daily commuter. And now let's join Jimmy Purdy on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM, and KPRL.com.
Good morning and welcome in. Thanks for tuning in. Phone lines are open, 805-238-5775. That's 805-238-KPRL, to be phonetically correct. If you're just joining for the first time, welcome. This is Gearhead Radio. Here to talk about automotive stuff, cars and stuff. It's just, that's so wide, I don't even know how to contain that into any less than that. Gearhead Radio. If you're a gearhead, you're in the right spot. So if you have something going on with your vehicle, I'm here to help for the next hour, answer any questions that you may have. Maybe you want to bring something up about the automotive industry. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of changes, a lot of just constant evolving. The only constant is a change. And that'll go right into the very first segment I want to get into, which is AC, which makes sense. We want to stay cool and comfortable. I thought it'd be a good idea considering the weather. So let's get into that. Weather today for your Mid-State Fair Saturday. 91 degrees here in Paso Robles, so it's going to be a little warm. I see another reports around 85, some actually coming in the high 70s. So who knows, but it's going to be sunny and warm. Be prepared for that. Tomorrow, a little bit of cloud coverage coming in, and with that, some elevated temps. And that stays that way through next week, 93, 94, 95 into Thursday. Getting back up into possible triple digits by next weekend. So it's going to be warm. As we all know, when the fair rolls into town, the temps jump about 15 degrees. Can anybody explain to me why? It's like maybe we should, I was we were having this conversation a couple days ago, like maybe they should move the fair a couple weeks earlier. That way it's a little bit cooler. It's like, no, then it'll just be hotter for longer because it's, it doesn't get hot when the fair gets here. It gets hot because the fair is here. That's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. I've been known to not be right all the time. Ask Leanne. She'll tell you. Anyways, moving on. Hopefully you have some plans for today. Get out and about. I don't know of any other events going on other than our standard cruise rotations. So if you're looking to get the car out and cruise around, these Friday nights are absolutely perfect. The temps cool off, and it is nice out. So Templeton, Atascadero, Paso, Santa Margarita, and San Miguel. That's the cruise rotation for every Friday night of the month, just so you know. Keep that on your calendar. That meant last night was the third Friday, so it was here in Paso Robles was the cruise. Not sure where we're meeting up anymore. Haven't participated in a few months, but I believe it's at the Sinclair gas station. But just cruise up and down Spring. I'm sure you'll collect with a bunch of people. And if you're curious about the new events, I encourage you, as much as you don't like to hear it, jump on Facebook, Paso Robles Car Community Group. Join that group and you can stay in touch with all the cruises and stuff going on in the area. All right, moving on. How do we stay cool? Let's get into some vehicle maintenance and stuff. Batteries are one of the big ones we see a lot of with the heat and the cold. I brought that up multiple times. Batteries, they don't like to be hot. They don't like to be cold. They kind of like the Goldilocks, like the three bears, right? They want that perfect temperature. But first things first, let's talk about AC because that's the immediate impact that you get in your vehicle when it's 100 degrees out. You want to get in there, you want to crank it up, and you want to be comfortable. No longer an option, right? It's a standard. You got to have AC. The vehicles are getting sold because the AC doesn't work. That's where we're at in this day and age. Like, if I don't have AC, I don't want the car. I mean, I understand. You got to be comfortable. It helps, you know. Cuts down on road rage and maybe fuel economy because you're not driving so fast. Patience. Good morning, you're on Gearhead Radio.
Good morning, Jimmy.
Hey.
Hey, I got a question concerning a radiator. I need a replacement. I don't know locally where would be a good place to pick up a radiator for a 2002 Chevy Tahoe.
An O2 Tahoe? Well, you can pick that up pretty much anywhere. Any of your local spots?
Well, I called Summit and I got two sizes and I just wanted to buy locally if I could. I don't know. I don't care for O'Reilly's necessarily, but I don't know. Just looking locally to pick up a new radiator.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go local, I mean, yeah, the local spots, the local Napa, local O'Reilly's, they'd probably be your best bet as far as something here in town. I don't know of anybody else that's making them for that particular year, just because it's a plastic tank. I would probably go with like a Murray. It's going to be a little bit more, but they're a little bit better product. Now yours is going to have a few options, whether you have the engine oil cooler and the transmission oil cooler. So be ready with those answers, because those are things they're going to ask you. Pretty simple to see. Just look down the radiator on the left-hand side. You'll see a couple tubes going into the passenger side, and then you'll see a couple tubes going into the driver's side. And the ones on the passenger side will be your trans cooler. The ones going to the driver's side will be your engine oil cooler. And so you'll see those like rigid hard lines being clipped in there.
Right.
And that'll be that'll be the options they ask you. But yeah, I would definitely try to get a Murray. That's one of the better aftermarket ones. It's a little bit pricier, but it's definitely worth it. I've had some of the other ones come in, and the cores are just a little, like a quarter inch more narrow, and they just don't cool as well with those trucks. So,
all right.
Just a word of advice. Thank you, man. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Bye now.
Bye. Yeah, no more custom radiators, you know, unless you want to replace the plastic one with an aluminum one. I guess I didn't think about that option. Then Summit Racing would probably be a good one. But I know, like, Brass Works up on Commerce, they do some radiator repair. They're usually pretty booked out, though. And then if you're looking for radiator repair, Industrial Radiator in Santa Maria, those guys have, like, saved our butt so many times. Well, I guess not us, but we do some classic car and older car stuff, and some of those radiators are just impossible to find. And then you're having to modify and build brackets and like build a whole new thing. And so they've really saved a lot of what seem to be far gone radiators, Industrial Radiator in Santa Maria. That guy, if he can't fix it, there's nobody that can. Cause I've had other radiators, other companies told us that there's nothing they can do. And then he fixes and patches it right up. So that might be an option for you. Maybe get a hold of him, see if there's something, but I don't think he builds radiators or he wants anything to do with the modern stuff. That's a good option too. But yeah, there's a cold case radiators on Summit Racing. We use ATEC, but yeah, Summit Racing or JEGS, Cold Case makes some really nice radiators for the modern stuff as well. That's pretty close to being bolt in, but not quite. So I don't really like recommending that unless you're, you know, mechanically inclined to rebuild brackets, and sometimes the fan doesn't work, so you got to build a shroud and put an electric fan. And I mean, not a huge deal, but it's not just something you can just plug right in and be done with it in a day. So anyways, hopefully that helps. Thanks for the call though. I mean, radiators, that's probably the next biggest one we get. But the biggest call we get when it gets hot out is AC. We've just like back-to-back-to-back AC concerns and replacements and stuff like that. So talking about AC, air conditioning, which once was considered a luxury, it's pretty standard on equipment on pretty much every car in the US, right? So the one thing that's changed, or the one thing that's constant is always change, right? So if you've known vehicles, if you stayed up to date, if you're a gearhead, that's why you're listening to the show, you know the AC refrigerant has changed multiple times, but just recently from the 134A to the 1234YF. And before that, it was the R12. So we have three advents of ACs just in my lifetime. That's the refrigerant that they're using. Good morning, you're on Gearhead Radio.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey.
Yeah, I've got a 5R110, and I just had it rebuilt. I just have a question for you for my own curiosity. It's already being fixed, but I don't know. Maybe you could give me an in-depth explanation.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. All right, so I got the Chatty rebuild. It ran good for about 600 miles. I'm having an issue now where I put it in drive. I drove it out from the parking lot to the street, and I put it back in park. And then when I put it back in drive, it doesn't. The engine, you can see the RPM kind of blip down, like it's trying. It's saying to engage, but there's no engagement. Then if you give it a little throttle, it like slams into gear. So I just parked it, right? I'm not going to say who, but it's going back. It's being fixed. But I looked at the PID data on my Forescan. I have a Forescan tool, you know, with all that.
Yeah.
And the line, the pressure that I was commanding was, well, I think it's normal, you know, 350, 400, 500, something like that. KPA, because I can't get it to do PSI. But when it starts acting up, it just throws the line pressure as high as it can get it. And then it starts leaking out of the inspection port. So I just shut it off, right? But it's really weird because if you let it sit and it's, anyways, I hear your bumper music, but if you want to pick up on this, on the.
Yeah, that, after the break. Yeah, that's all. Yeah, I got the information. I definitely got some stuff for you, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just for my own curiosity, someone's going to fix it, but I like to know, you know, the details.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. I'll go through a detailed explanation of that here after the break. Thanks for the call. And on that note, we'll be right back.
Conservative patriots and freedom lovers, join the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County for our biggest event of the year, the Lincoln Reagan Trump Dinner, celebrating America's 250th birthday, August 1st at the Raven Ranch in Templeton. Featured speaker is Trump defender Devin Nunes. General admission tickets, $150, with VIP at $250. Early bird pricing still on till July 15th. Seating is limited and this event will sell out. Visit rpsloc.org for tickets today. Paid for by the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County.
Gold is at an all-time high. Now is the time to take your scrap gold and turn it into cash or trade it in for new jewelry at Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry in Paso Robles. Take the old or broken bracelets, chains, rings, or trinkets that you never wear and go home with cash in your pocket or get an additional 25% off to use towards a new item. Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry is family-owned and located at 1224 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Paso Robles. Open Wednesday through Saturday.
John Stafford Construction and Pest Control, locally owned and operated for over 20 years. Combination of construction, whether it's new construction, remodel, and concrete work, along with pest control, including termites and bird control, and more. Get it done the right way and on time. John Stafford Construction and Pest Control, the one call that does it all. Give John a call, 466-8667.
The Red Scooter Deli with two locations, downtown and on 6th Street in Paso Robles. The downtown location on Pine Street is open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursdays now for concerts in the park. Plan your musical enjoyment with a to-go dinner from the downtown Red Scooter Deli. Red Scooter Deli has beer, wine, and mimosas. Ask for the 15% off KPRL discount. Great deli, fresh food delivered throughout Paso Robles, Templeton, the airport area, and wineries. Go to redscooterdeli.com.
Work hard, work safe, wear the best. Red Wing shoes, built for comfort, built for durability, built to handle the toughest jobs. And on the Central Coast, there's only one place to get them. Tack and Shoes, your exclusive Red Wing dealer with the best selection, expert fitting, and boots that won't let you down. Got a Red Wing voucher? Bring it in. They accept them all. Tack and Shoes on the corner of 8th and Spring in Paso Robles or on Marsh Street across from Wells Fargo in San Luis Obispo. Work starts here.
What should you look for when choosing an insurance agent? Experience is a key quality. A good agent responds promptly. It gives you clear explanations, letting you know exactly all the details of your policy. And a good agent has good listening skills, and a good agent takes the time to understand your unique situation. A good agent, like Kevin Hunt Insurance, 105 South Main Street in Templeton. Call 805-434-3276.
Welcome back. You are tuned in to Gearhead Radio on AM 1230 KPRL. Appreciate you being here. I'm your host, Jimmy Purdy, from Shifting Gears Auto Repair, located at 1621 North River Road in Paso Robles. If you're just tuning in for the first time, appreciate you being here. You can check us out online at shiftinggears805. That's shift with the letter N, gears805.com. Kind of give you a quick little summary. There's a shop tour there up on the website. Gives you a little rundown about who we are, what we do, who I am, what I look like, if that's important to you. But today, for the next hour, here to bring you Gearhead Radio. So let's get to the phones. Good morning on Gearhead Radio.
Hey, I'm back.
Hey.
So the only other thing I wanted to mention was that when it you know, slams into gear, I got my foot on the brake and it's trying to kind of move off, you know, without any input from the pedal. So it's like almost like it's locking down and it wants to take off. But it's at idle. And the first time it did it in reverse, now it's doing it in drive. So I just left it, you know. I don't know. But the leaking obviously is concerning to me. I don't know if the front seal's blown out or what, but anyways, I'm sure you could elaborate.
Yeah, there's a few different things. So the main thing is getting into the line pressure tap circuit and seeing exactly what it is. What it sounds like is the command side is doing what it's supposed to, right? So it's going to elevate line pressure more in reverse than in drive. You're always going to have more line pressure in reverse than you are in drive. Now there's a few things to look for if the pressure was low, right? Like the fluid intake. So if the filter had a crack in it, right, or was restricted, it was sucking air, was aerated, it wasn't fully seated into the pump. Those things where it's going to want to see a certain amount of line pressure, and if it doesn't see it in a certain amount of time, it's just going to keep jacking that line pressure up, right? So the main thing is the pump's always going to put out a fixed amount of pressure, say 300 pounds out of the pump, just for reference. From the pump, as it's pumping out, it's going to go into the line pressure solenoid. Now, the line pressure solenoid is kind of reverse engineered, and where the more voltage goes to the pressure regulator, the lower the pressure is. So if that pressure solenoid was ever disconnected, that's going to be full line pressure. Right, so with the computer command, the computer is actually going to command and slow it down, and it's a pulse width modulated solenoid. So the more input from the computer, the less the line pressure that you get. So being that it's elevating the line pressure that high, for me, the first place I'm looking is the pressure control solenoid. You want to make sure there's no leaks, none of the O-rings got torn or something like that, because it's designed by fault that if that pressure regulator solenoid failed and it got stuck open, kind of look at it like a thermostat, right? It's going to pop open, or if the wire was cut or left disconnected, the transmission itself is going to get full line pressure. Now, if you're leaking out of the front, that kind of leads me in another direction. It sounds like we're way over pressurizing. Even if that solenoid is open, it should never allow full line pump pressure through the rest of the transmission. It should always still step it down from 300 down to about 120. That's going to be your solenoid regulating pressure. So if it's starting to leak out of the front, it's possible that the seal just didn't get installed correctly, and that's why it's leaking, or the unit itself might be overpressurizing to the point where it's starting to actually overpressurize and blow out of that seal. I've seen them with some of the custom aftermarket ones, when the guys start hopping them up, it'll actually split the case in half, because you'll get 800, 900 pounds of pressure, and it'll actually, it twists the case. So
okay.
There's a few things. Yeah, I don't think we're going that dramatic. I'm just using it as an example.
No, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I've talked to you about this. You know, this truck's old. I'm not really.
Yeah.
And so it's weird because it drove fine, and then I started having a little issue where it didn't want to find a gear, or it just the pedal went dead, or you know, and then it was like this, and then I drove it and it was fine, and then when it would get hot, it would start acting up, and then I just parked it. And then it drove out to the street fine. But then once it, I don't know, it seems like once it sees something it doesn't like, it starts messing around. I mean, I'm just confused. So I if it's something with the transmission, that's fine. I didn't know if it was a computer problem or.
Well, that's the biggest thing.
See, all there's no faults.
Yeah.
There's no faults on the solenoids. You know, I don't know. It's not an expensive software, but when you're looking at it, I don't see any faults. in the status of any of the solenoids or anything weird.
Yeah, the first thing I do with transmission diagnostics when we get them in the shop is the first things we want to divide is we want to separate the unit from the controllers, right? So we want to know if it's a command style fault or if it's an actual internal hydraulic fault. From what you've described, if the command pressure is matching the actual pressure, that tells me that the computer is commanding something and it's trying to achieve it, right? Now the feedback circuit could be a problem. Sometimes when PCMs do go faulty, you won't get a code, right? Because the PCM's faulty. So don't ever rely on the fact that you don't have a code that's going to signify that there's no problem with the PCM. That's always a possibility too, right? It might just be brain dead where it's like, we think it should be this much pressure, but that's not what the coding in the computer should be. So there are separate things there, but the main thing is making sure that what I would do is disconnect the connector of the transmission. That'll default the trans, and then you should have no problem with it going into gear and engaging right away. If you still have that problem with the computer disconnected, that you know right away that there's something inside of the transmission that's faulty. Maybe a sticky valve, right? Because there's a solenoid regulating valve that's controlled by the solenoid pressure regulating solenoid. And if that valve is getting stuck in the bore, or it's worn out and the valve body needs to be replaced, or just reamed out with an oversized valve, whatever, that would at least divide and, you got to divide and conquer,
something
right?
In the pump.
Yeah.
Something in the pump or something, Okay, the only other thing I could rack in my brain is that I did have a direct solenoid code, but I haven't had that come back. I mean, so you see what I mean? I got all these weird things, so
absolutely,
I'm sure they're going to get down to the bottom of it, but you're saying it's probably, they would have to check the line pressure and compare it to what the computer is commanding.
Yeah, that's my style. That's the way I go with it. I want to disconnect. I want to get all that. I know functionally how the transmission should work when it's in default mode, and that's what I would check, right? Because it's a hydraulic unit. It's a hydraulic pump. So remove the electronics, test what it is doing. If it's out of spec with the computer disconnected, okay, now we're diving back into the trans, right? You disconnect the computer, and now it's back, and it's actually working like it's supposed to. Okay, now we have a command problem. We got the computer telling it to do something that it shouldn't be doing. So it's just trying to simplify it a little bit and break it down into smaller bite-sized chunks.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope that helps.
That sounds interesting. Well, this is not my issue right now, you know what I mean.
So. The main thing is it's not your concern. I'm sure they're going to take care of it, but
I just wanted curiosity to get an understanding. It's weird, and this truck has had so many weird issues. It's like, I don't know, I'm just, I've gone through the gamut of replacing stuff, which has helped me learn, but it's like,
totally understand.
I don't know.
Keep us surprised and let us know what happens. We're all on pins and needles. Have a good weekend.
Right, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. I mean, I don't know, a lot of other shops. It's when it comes to automatic transmissions, most shy away from it. They don't really want to mess with them. And it's understandable. There's enough stuff on vehicles that keeps us busy, right? The way I see it is And I've said this before, if you can do VVT solenoids, if you can do timing with hydraulic functions, if you can work on fuel injectors, like it's a hydraulic pump with solenoids. It's tough because you can't see it. I think that's what it is, right? You're kind of working blind because you just look underneath. It's underneath the vehicle. You can't really see anything. You can't take anything apart and figure out how it works. It's not like the remote control that you got to tear apart on the counter and like see what's inside of it, how this thing works. You can do that, but it's really expensive. It takes a lot of time. That is one option, right? You just pull the thing apart and see what's going on. And I've done that for a long time. When I first started building them, you don't understand the concept of it. So you just open it up and you start looking to see what's broken. You replace what's broken and you put it back together. Over time, you start realizing that it's actually a little bit easier and more efficient if you figure out how it works and then you use the proper testing equipment to analyze what's going on inside. And then when you get to the point where you pull the transmission out and put it on the bench, because that's going to have to happen, you know exactly what you're looking for and you have everything ready to go to fix it. A little more efficient that way. There's still surprises. I mean, it's like Pandora's box, You never know what you're going to open it up. It's like remember those Wonder Balls? The wonder balls, you never know what's inside. It's kind of like that sometimes too. A little bit different, but Interesting enough. I mean, the curiosity is what keeps me going with it too. Like, why is it doing this? Let's figure out exactly what's going on here. And then you get to the root cause of it, you figure it out, and you put that in your memory bank, and now you know forever. So it's cool stuff to learn. I mean, that's what we're all here to do. I'm sure that's why you're listening right now. That's why I'm talking. We're all learning together. So pretty interesting stuff, especially when it comes to transmissions. Everyone's just really scared of them. I don't know why. They're expensive, I guess. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, that's got to be what it is. $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. Now, some of these 10 speeds are being like $9,000 to replace. Yeah, I guess that's kind of scary. Speaking of scary, I got to take a break. I'll be right back.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero. See their online specials at aceautocare.com.
Fox News, I'm Deborah Valentine. The U.S. military targeting key Iranian infrastructure and military sites, including a key port, as renewed strikes continue for a seventh night. Fox's Madeline Rivera.
The U.S. has hit roads and bridges around Bandar Abbas, a strategic port city near the Strait of Hormuz. Their aim is to isolate the IRGC from resupplying.
Iran are targeting U.S. Middle East allies with strikes, including Kuwait. Millions of people in the U.S. remain under air quality alerts due to smoke from Canadian wildfires moving east from the Midwest.
That smoke's going to continue to move into New England. So if you're in front of this rain, expect the smoke to get worse through the day until the rain ultimately does clear it up.
Fox Weather's Adam Klotz reporting a resurgence of wildfires could bring additional smoke into the U.S. next week. America's listening to Fox News.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Hello, this is Danny from Paso Tile and Stone, where elegance is made affordable. Rejoice with me because we've expanded. We have new location downtown Paso Robles on 1101 and 1103 Paso Robles Street, right across the street from Site 1. And we're going to celebrate by having a party. Everybody's invited, especially contractors. Contractors Celebration Day, July 31st at 4 o'clock. We're going to have a live band. Neighborhood Cats is going to be there. We're going to have food. We're going to have fun. I'm giving a lot of stuff away. And we have charities that we're going to donate a lot of money to. So please don't miss it. Come on down. The party starts Friday, July 31st, but does not end. It starts when you get there. 1101 and 1103 Paso Robles Street. Come on down. We'll see you there. We have a buy one, get one free deal. Blessings to you and your family. Thank you.
If you need a great, easy place for lunch, try the Spirit of Paso Robles in the River Oaks neighborhood. There is plenty of parking, and it's just a couple minutes from downtown Paso. Some of the locals' favorites: grilled prawn cob salad, cowboy Cuban with brisket and pulled pork, smash burger with two patties, the very popular beer-battered fish and chips, and shrimp tacos. Great lunch and easy parking, and the patio is pet-friendly. The Spirit of Paso Robles, right in the middle of River Oaks Golf Course.
Welcome back. This is Gearhead Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Purdy from Shifting Gears Auto Repair, located at 1621 North River Road in Paso Robles. Appreciate you being here. For the next half hour, we have a Gearhead Radio. So I had a call before the break. If you've been listening about hydraulics on a transmission, what might be going on? You put it in gear and nothing happens. That's not good. And just like a word of advice with automatic transmissions, if you're experiencing strains, shifting concerns, there's only two different things that we can really get into here. One of them, stop driving it, get it to the shop. you know what it should feel like if you've driven your car for a while, right? If you even if you get a different car, like it's just an innate feeling. If you've ever driven like a CVT transmission after an automatic that shifts, you know how weird that is. But it, you get used to it and you pick up on the nuances. You're smarter than you think you are. Trust me. You know how the vehicle should work. You don't have to be mechanically inclined. That's you just innately know. We all know. We're all automotively tuned, believe it or not. You just know. And so if something's not right, you need to get in and get it looked at. Now, the second thing that it could be is the possibility of your battery being disconnected or somebody else was driving it before you. And this is like on newer vehicles. We're saying in the last like 8 years, the modules are always going to self-learn. They're going to self-control. We talked about, if you were listening, about the pressure regulator, pressure regulating solenoid being controlled by the PCM. Now, that's important to know because the computer is going to adjust the line pressure depending on the torque input. The torque input is the big foot in the driver's seat. That's going to be, I mean, there's some sensors that monitor it too, but if you're a rough driver, if you're a stoplight warrior, the transmission is going to adjust its line pressure, or rather the PCM is going to adjust the line pressure to compensate for that, to help extend the life of the transmission. If you get into it and you're not a stoplight warrior, but somebody just drove it like that before you, then it's going to start shifting a little harder, right? It's going to have a little bit more of a clunk, right? It's going to be a little more firm, a little more aggressive. And you're like, that doesn't feel right. Give it about 20 or 30 miles. It should self-adjust about 10 upshift cycles, meaning from, you know, starting from a stop up to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, how many gears you got. You want to do that about 10 times, and it should slowly start self-recalibrating and lowering that line pressure to make it more comfortable for you. So those are the two things there. It's not always something bad, but typically it is, unless you let someone borrow your car, like a teenager. That's not nice. Not all teenagers drive like that, but you know what I mean. So a couple things to watch out for, especially if you put it in gear and you notice there's like a huge delay, that's a big problem. And that's a problem that we can fix before it gets any worse. The number one cause of a delayed engagement into drive or reverse, usually you start filling it in reverse, is the filter being restricted. If the filter's restricted and the fluid's not priming the pump, as you start it and you put it into gear, it's going to take a while to suck that fluid through the filter and get up into the pump and then into the rest of the stuff. Now, in the meantime, all those components are starting to run dry. So we don't want to do that too many times. We want to get that filter looked at. I've had because everything's made out of plastic now, I've had those filters split down the seam, and that creates it creates an air pocket that sucks air in, and that creates cavitation, which then you lose the pump prime. So then you lose the ability to put it in gear, stuff like that. So important stuff to know. All right, moving on. Let's get back into some AC stuff. So we were talking about the differences of refrigerants that are coming out. The 134A is what we're at now, right? About 24% in use. And it's one of the most common ones is the 134A. Replacement of 134A was phased out in 2017. And 1234YF has been now it's taken its place. So as of 2017, vehicles 2018 and newer are now 1234YF. So important things to know is 1234YF is not an HFC and was supposed to address the shortcomings of both automotive refrigerants that came before it. And it does not affect the ozone layer, and it's not a greenhouse gas, right? So they solve the problem, right? No, not so fast. So a study by University of Bristol has revealed that while 1234YF, also known as HFO 1234YF, does provide these benefits, it's also becoming a major source of, here we go, acetic acid. We'll just call it TFA for the fact of me not being very good with these in the atmosphere. So according to ChemTrust, TFA is a forever chemical, and I'm sure you've heard all about that on the internet and on everything else. Now, forever chemicals can harm liver function and reproductive functions, including unborn children. R134A has also been found to pollute TFAs, but not nearly as high as the rate as the replacement does. So on a global scale, 134A emissions are about 22 times higher due to its long period of use since the 1990s. 1234YF may already be generating three quarters as many TFAs despite only having been used since 2017. Hotspots for current TFA emissions overlap parts of Europe with high vehicle emissions, where the 1234YF has seen greater use a longer time than elsewhere in the world. Maybe a sign of things to come. So it also adds that while the YF is not itself a greenhouse gas, it can break down into rather powerful greenhouse gases like carbon tetrafluoride, which has a global warming potential several times higher than 134A, and HF23, which has an even stronger global warming potential than the old R12 refrigerant. And on top of all of that, it costs more than three times as much as the 134A, which is important to you and I, contributing to the record high prices of new cars. So it's more expensive, pollutes larger amounts of TFAs, and makes global warming worse than 134A instead of better, like it was supposed to. So what's the best option here? I think it's time to go back what mom used to call 440 air conditioning, which was four windows drive down and driving at 40 miles an hour. Maybe it's time to bring the vent windows back. I don't know. Every advent that we get, it always is like one step forward and two steps back. And I bring this up because if you've had your AC, if you have a vehicle 2018 or new and you've had your AC repaired or recharged, you know the cost is significantly higher. The cost per pound of refrigerant is up 1.3 times the cost of 134A. And R12 just worked better. If you had a vehicle, if you were blessed to have a vehicle with R12 refrigerant, you know how well that refrigerant worked. It made it cold. I mean, 35 degrees, 36. Some people say they had ice coming out of the vents. It worked really well. 134A, not so much. And even the YF, it just doesn't work that great. Maybe 48 degrees to 46 degrees out of the vents. Where 134A, I've seen down at 40 degrees, 42 degrees is about the norm. So as it's gotten over time, these quote-unquote improvements, right, have actually slowly degraded what we get as consumers in our vehicles, and also makes it harder on the environment, which is what they're trying to fix. And it's more expensive. Not to mention how, like, as an independent service station, I have to have both the machines, right? We have to have the 134A. We had to have the R12, which is phased out, but the 134A and now the 1234YF. And believe me, on the repair side, there's problems with that machine that we didn't have with the 134A machine. There's an O2 sensor that likes to fail at least once a year. It's like about $1,000 to replace. So as these new machines come out to fix the newer stuff, they're becoming more expensive to fix as well. And it just kind of makes me think about like the McDonald's controversy with the milkshake machines, right? It's like, are we just like inventing new stuff to then invent more new stuff so that more of this stuff breaks so you can charge us to fix the stuff that we didn't need before? It's just, you can't help but think it, right? Because like, what's the point of all this? And then these studies come out and it kind of proves the fact of the matter, right? What are we doing here? So anyway, let's get into some stuff that might help you with your AC, because that's what you want to know, right? So with an AC compressor, the way the system works, what can we do to get the most benefit, right? Like, how do we, if my AC is not blown cold, how do I fix it? Well, you really want to go to a service station. One of the main things that causes all these new policies and procedures and laws to be put in place is the consumer trying to fix it themselves. I mean, I'm calling it out. If you buy the cans at the local parts store and you shove it in your car, where did the old stuff go? You're not containing it. We're not recycling it. And it just gives them more ammunition to keep up coming up with new stuff. As an independent repair shop, we categorize it. We have our MAC 609 license, which is a refrigerant recovery license that allows us to recover it, make sure that we're accounting for it all. The other thing is if your AC is not blown cold, just don't go get it recharged. Right? Like, yeah, that might fix it. And you don't want to have to pay all this money and all this stuff. It's going to be more expensive if you just recharge it and not find the leak. If it's low, the leak needs to be found. there needs to be time to be taken to figure out where the refrigerant went. For one, it's really expensive. And for two, it is not the greatest thing for all of us to breathe. So we do want to kind of do the right thing there. We want to, you know, like, let's get real here. And if that's not enough ammunition for you, what I just talked to you about, it should be. Like, the fact that they keep changing the refrigerant is because when your AC goes low, you just call the shop that will recharge it for the cheapest amount of money, and the cycle repeats. Where is this refrigerant going? If we're taking the refrigerant out of the vehicle, there should be the same amount going back into it. That's the idea. But if we're consuming refrigerant, it means that the rest of it, where is it going? We got to find the leak. One of the main causes of AC issues that we see in this day and age is failing compressors. They made some changes. They went from a pumping to what they call a wobble plate compressor. We see a lot of problems out of there. The seals on the compressors themselves, typically the main cause of the leak. I see that a lot. Another one is the evaporator. This is something that you can check on your own. So as you're running your AC, you should see water at the bottom, right? As the evaporator core is condensing, it should create water. Kind of like taking an ice cold Coke can out of the fridge and you put it on the counter and then it leaves a little puddle of water. That's what should be happening in the dash of your vehicle. That's the evaporator core getting ice cold and then it's condensing and you're getting water. Now that water needs to leave the vehicle. If it doesn't, it starts building up inside there. Now this is important because what happens is that core can start rusting out. Now they are made out of aluminum, so it's more of an oxidation process, but they're very thin. It doesn't take a lot of corrosion for those evaporators to then get little pinholes. That is another common issue that we see with AC problems with them being low. And it is something where you can recharge it. You get about maybe 3 or 4 months. It's warm again. You recharge it and the cycle repeats and repeats and repeats because it is a very, very, very small pinhole that just slowly leaks out. A couple things we can do. We have a refrigerant detector that we can put in the vents to see if there's refrigerant coming out. We can go to the drain tube, see there. What my point is make sure that when you're using your AC, periodically look to make sure that wherever you park, you're seeing a little puddle of water. And that lets you know that the drain is not clogged up. Easiest thing to do is to clean out that vent tube, right? And it's usually just a little bit of dirt or something stuck at the very bottom. You just got to squeeze it and get the dirt out of it, and then it'll drain the water out. And that'll help keep that evaporator in better condition, because you don't want that water to build up in there. That's number one DIY thing you can do. Also with the cabin air filter, if your cabin air filter is getting restricted, it's not going to allow the airflow, and it's the same process. So that $10, you know, cabin air filter can save you a lot of money as well. So I got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Mars Mega Storage, your state-of-the-art storage solution on the Central Coast. Mars Mega Storage can store your RV, boat, car, household, or commercial items in your own fully enclosed unit or covered storage space. Our on-site amenities include security cameras throughout, gate access from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. with your own personal gate code, 17-foot high steel walls for extra security, fully paved, and a wash rack with professional pressure washer, buckets, brushes, and soap, as well as a dump station, all while providing our guests the highest quality of customer service. We encourage you to come see all the guest features we have to offer. At Mars Mega Storage, we strive to give you the best possible storage experience at the best possible price. Big or small, we store it all. Mars Mega Storage, 101 Wilsona Road in Paso Robles. Call us at 467-3200 or visit marsmega.com.
This is Jordan Cunningham. When life throws you a curveball, you need advocates that will fight for you. Along with my wife, Shauna, Cunningham Law Group is a legal team that understands that legal battles are personal. Whether you're navigating a difficult divorce, fighting for time with your child, or facing criminal charges, we will fight for you. Cunningham Law Group, family law and criminal defense, experience with integrity. 805-369-2399 or CunninghamLawSLO.com. Because when it matters most, we're on your side.
Lint Patrol specializes in dryer vent cleaning. You can trust Dylan with Lint Patrol to keep your vents clean and safe, and this helps your dryer run more efficiently and reduces the risk of a house fire. Dylan has over 6 years of appliance preventative maintenance experience and is knowledgeable in all things appliance care. This is an affordable, simple way to help protect your home. Contact Dylan today at 805-975-975. 5176 or visit lintpatrolca.com.
And we're back, getting down to the end of the hour. Thanks for hanging out. This is always fun. Hopefully we're all learning something together. What were we talking about? Oh, AC. Because it's hot. Someone left their heater on. So we gotta use AC. Alright, a few other things I want to go over with the AC stuff. So, we talked about making sure the evaporator drain is drained out. That helps out a lot too. But you want to also make sure that the condenser, which is the AC radiator, for I don't make it simpler, that's cleaned out as well. You don't want a bunch of bugs in there. You want to hose that out. That is very important as well. Now, the other big one we get is the electric fan. The fan needs to be on with the AC on. Something simple that you can check yourself when the vehicle's running. You click the AC button. You should hear that electric fan kick on. Now, we're talking if you're having an AC issue. If everything's working the way it should, you don't need to really worry about it. Feels cold, everything feels good. Maintenance-wise, cabin air filter helps. That's pretty much it. Check for noises. You click the AC, make sure the belt doesn't squeal, make sure you hear the fan come on. Those are simple things. Over time, as the compressor starts to fail, the bearings can start seizing or the compressor starts locking up, it's going to put more strain on the belt and on the engine. Pretty typical that if you have a four-cylinder car, you know, with the AC on, it's going to take a little longer to go over the grade. You know, it's robbing the engine of power. It does take a lot of energy from the engine to turn that compressor over. So that's, we know that. It will get to the point, though, you'll hear the belt starting to chirp or squeal because it's just putting so much torque on that system when you turn it on. So it's something else to look out for. Now back to the electric fan. Now this is important because we need to know how the AC system works. We need to know what's going on inside there. How does it make cold air? Well, it's mostly magic. There's wizards that are under your hood and you click the button and they get to work and they just use this big potion and they're spinning it and then, no, that's not what happens. So the compressor takes refrigerant and it compresses it. Step one. We have to have refrigerant. We have to have oil in there to mix with it. Now, as the compressor is pulling from the suction side, which is pulling the refrigerant out of the evaporator, it's going to pump it into the condenser. Now, it's important that that condenser condenses the refrigerant because we want high-pressure gas to be turned into a high-pressure liquid. Now, this is a very, very, very important part. And this is also important to know that the proper amount of refrigerant is put back in the vehicle. The condenser is only a certain size, and we don't want any of that high-pressure gas getting through the condenser to the other side. We want nice, pure liquid coming out of the bottom of that condenser. That's why it's called a condenser. That's why it's important that fan's working, because we have to have airflow across that condenser to make sure that we're condensing the refrigerant from a gas to a liquid. This is important to know. I'm going to bring up something that maybe makes sense to you. So, have you ever barbecued with propane? If you're anything like Hank Hill, I'm sure you can agree with that. We want to taste the meat, not the heat. But we are in San Luis Obispo County, so Santa Maria barbecue is the only way to go. But if you've used propane before, you know that the top of the tank after a while starts to ice. What's happening is that propane, which is in that tank as a liquid form because it's been condensed into a liquid to fill the tank up, and you can pull it, you can pick it up and you can swish it around and you hear the liquid that's in there. When that condensed high pressure liquid gets turned into a low pressure gas, which then goes up into the burner, that's the phase conversion. That's what's icing the top of the propane. Now that's important to know. So once that refrigerant in your vehicle has made its way through the AC condenser as a liquid, it then goes through a metering device. Think of the metering device as the little valve that sits on top of your propane tank. In this case, with your vehicle, it's like a fixed orifice tube or a thermal expansion valve. Most vehicles in this day and age are using thermal expansion valves. A lot of trucks, a lot of the bigger vehicles, a lot of the domestic stuff, they go with the fixed orifice tube. A little bit cheaper. I mean, it works. A thermal expansion valve, in my opinion, is a much more efficient way to do it. It's self-regulating. It's like a little thermostat. It's kind of like a little pressure regulating valve that kind of operates on its own. Just, it's like more like a thermostat. And what's important though, is as that goes through there, it's then phasing that from that high pressure liquid into a low pressure gas. That low pressure gas then makes its way straight through the evaporator. That's why that metering device is right next to that evaporator core, because you're basically taking the top of that propane tank and expanding it up into an evaporator core. You take a fan, then you blow air through it, and now you have cold air. Just like if you took a fan and blew it across the top of that propane tank that's iced, you're going to have cool air. Then that refrigerant's going to make its way through the evaporator back to the compressor, and the cycle starts over again. Now there's a receiver dryer that's involved in that process as well. Sometimes on the other side of the condenser, sometimes on the other side of the evaporator. When the idea is that it's a receiver dryer, so it's a desiccant filter, because you don't want any moisture in that system. That's for a different story. We want to talk about just the fundamentals of how the refrigerant is making it through its system and how it's making cold air, because that's what you want. You want the cold air. So if that refrigerant charge is low, the compressor cannot compress the refrigerant. There's not enough in there. It's not going to make its way through. Just like when the tank starts going empty, you start noticing it's no longer icy on top. It's low. Of course, it's not cold anymore. Now, alternatively, it could be too high. If you have too much pressure, then what's happening is that you're not giving the condenser a chance to condense the refrigerant. So you're getting some gas, some high pressure gas getting through the condenser, and it's not that nice, sweet liquid that we want. And then you lose the phase conversion, because you're not going from that. You're not having that phase conversion from the liquid to the gas. That's what we want. That's what's key. So it has to be the proper amount. There's a little bit of tolerance in between. You can be a little low, can be a little high, but for the most part, that's where we want it. Now, that's why it's important to know that the condenser fan is working, because that's also going to help. You also notice when you're going on the highway, it works much better. You feel a little bit cooler. If you raise the RPMs just a touch, it makes it a little colder because the compressor is working a little faster. If the cabin air filter is new and clean and there's no restrictions, it's nice. It's also nice if your blower fan has got the proper amount of airflow, because it's nice to have a lot of cold air. So those are the couple things that we want to check on. And that's why I said it's important as well to make sure you're seeing water coming out of the bottom as well. You want to make sure that drain's working, but that also lets you know that evaporator core is getting nice and ice cold. So a couple little things there. I hope that helps to visualize how the whole process works. It is quite simple. There's not a lot to it. There are some sensors and stuff. I've had issues with like high pressure overload sensors and the low pressure sensors. Those are big problems. It's designed to save itself. So if the low pressure sensor notices that there's not enough refrigerant in there, it's not going to allow the compressor to turn on. You can also have that sensor fail in the proper amount of refrigerant, but the sensor's bad. The newer GMs, I'm having a lot of problem with the high pressure sensor, and that's designed for the other side of it. So if it thinks there's too much refrigerant, it's just going to shut down the compressor as well to avoid it blowing up, because that was a big problem with some of the GM trucks. That liquid line would get all the way through the whole system and actually get liquid into the compressor, and the compressors don't like to compress liquid, so they would blow up. That's not good. Anyways, hopefully that was helpful. Park in the shade. Get the shady spot. That's an easy one, right? Anyways, thanks for being here. If you have a problem with your AC, we are rocking and rolling. We have back-to-back-to-back AC problems going on. So we are definitely got the machines out, and they are warmed up, ready to roll for you. Bring it on down anytime next week, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. One of our AC technicians will more than gladly take a look at it for you. Or it might even be myself. Who knows? But bring it on down. You can check us out online at shiftinggears805.com. And as always, put it on your calendar next Saturday at 9 a.m. Got a special guest for you coming in. Mr. Richie Wimmer from the Morro Bay High School is going to come in. He is the automotive high school teacher. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So definitely want to tune in next Saturday for that one. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the fair. See ya.
Gearhead Radio with Jimmy Purdy
is brought to you by Shifting Gears and Paso Robles on River Road. You can trust Jimmy and his team to take care of you and your vehicle the first time, every time. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM. Paso Robles, Tascadero, and Templeton.